condemned the racist, violent events and demonstrations. Trump revved up supporters Tuesday with a defense of his response to a white supremacist organized rally in Virginia.
Here's what I said on Saturday. We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. This is me speaking. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. That's me speaking on Saturday, right after the event. So I'm condemning the strongest possible terms, egregious display, hatred, bigotry, and violence. Okay, I think you can't do much better, right?
Well, at the U.S. president's rally in Phoenix, however, Mr. Trump omitted the phrase he used in his original comments, leveling criticism on both sides of the demonstration. At the Phoenix rally, President Trump said he is willing to risk a budget crisis in order to honor a campaign pledge to build what he called an absolutely necessary wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. He told the crowd, if we have to close down the government, we are going to build that wall. This is VOA News. The U.S. Navy has relieved the commander of the 7th Fleet after several collisions involving warships, including one Monday that killed 10 U.S. sailors. Vice Admiral Joseph Alcoin was due to retire in January, but his departure was moved up after the USS John McCain became the second U.S. guided missile destroyer to collide with a commercial vessel in as many months. The Navy revealed Tuesday that divers had recovered human remains from the ship, which suffered significant damage. U.S. investigators are trying to determine what led to the collision with a Liberian tanker ship near the Strait of Malacca, near Singapore. Navy photos show a gaping hole below the waterline on the destroyer's port side, some sleeping areas and communication rooms flooded as a result. Officials in Yemen say the Saudi-led coalition has carried out airstrikes, hitting a small hotel near the capital of Sana'a and killing dozens of Shiite Houthi rebels and civilians. The Associated Press quotes the officials as saying an estimated number of 60 people have been killed in the strikes Wednesday morning. It was not immediately clear why the coalition jets targeted the hotel, which is located in Arhab, about 35 kilometers or 22 miles north of Sana'a. Aid agencies are warning that thousands of Iraqi civilians trapped in the Islamic State-controlled city of Tal Afar face great danger as they try to flee escalating fighting.
No one knows how many civilians remain in Tal Afar. Humanitarian agencies have been unable to enter this Iraqi city since Islamic State militants captured it in 2014. However, the agencies estimate the city's pre-conflict population stands at around 200,000. The United Nations reports more than 30,000 people have fled Tal Afar district since April, with thousands more remaining behind. UN refugee spokesman Andre Mahecic says,
people leaving Tal Afar are walking long distances to reach safety without food or water, at times up to 20 hours, and in scorching heat.
Mahecic warns Iraqi civilians inside Tal Afar are likely to be held as human shields by IS militants, and those who attempt to flee could be shot. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Pakistan's military chief reacted strongly today to President Donald Trump's accusations that Islamabad takes billions of dollars in aid money from Washington and then helps militants plotting deadly terrorist attacks against American troops in Afghanistan. General Qamar Javed Bajwa told the U.S. ambassador in a meeting at Pakistan ME Army headquarters in Rawalpindi, we're not looking for any material or financial assistance from the USA.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Angolans cast ballots Wednesday in the first election in decades that doesn't include longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos. The ruling party is widely projected to maintain power, but some voters have made clear that they are casting ballots for change.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Luanda. Details next.
Also, there's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Angolans cast ballots today in the first election in decades that doesn't include longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos. The ruling party is widely projected to maintain power, but some voters have made clear they are casting ballots for change. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Luanda.
On Wednesday, Angola's retiring president did something he hasn't done in decades. He voted for someone else. Just after 9 a.m. local time, President José Eduardo dos Santos shuffled slowly into a side entrance of Luanda's polling station 1047, a law school named after the nation's first president. Dos Santos took the reins after Agostinho Neto died in 1979. After Dos Santos cast his ballot, he and his entourage slowly walked out. He did not speak to the press and ignored VOA's question about whom he voted for. But Dos Santos previously made his choice clear. "I am here," he told this massive crowd during the final pre-election rally of the ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, "to support our candidate." And it's likely his chosen successor, Defense Minister João Lourenço, will prevail. The MPLA is predicted to win this legislative election. Its top candidate, Lourenço, would then become president. The next president will inherit a country dependent on oil and imports, and beset by high unemployment and inflation so dire that the black market exchange rate for dollars is double the official rate. Dos Santos has repeatedly been accused of flagrant corruption, and his children run several powerful state enterprises. Meanwhile, the majority of Angolans live in poverty, without basic services. Anger over this inequality propelled Angolans to action, including 42-year-old Esperanza Francisco Domingos. "Today is my first time voting because I was never interested in voting and I never knew the value of voting," she said. "And today I voted for change. I voted for change because everybody says that we have to vote for change. We have to vote for change. And let's see, as time goes by, if our lives change. Because we don't see any change and we are suffering." Others, like 62-year-old Maria Boaventura, were more optimistic as they cast their ballot. "I think there are better prospects," she said, adding, "It seems that there will be more transparency." Voters say they're also seeking an end to the high levels of perceived corruption. 65-year-old Adolfo Makwanga condemned the Dos Santos family's lavish lifestyle. "His son bought a $5,000 watch in London," he said. "And those of us who fought for the country, what do we have? Nothing." The six political parties have discussed the economy at length, with Lourenço promising to diversify the economy and the leading opposition UNITA Party pledging to crack down on corruption and welcome foreign investment. For many Angolans, however, this election is also a novel opportunity to do what the president did: vote for someone new. "It is an ambitious election," said 55-year-old João Malungo, adding that he is honored to vote in his country. Officials have said results are expected the day after the election. Anita Powell, VOA News, Luanda, Angola.
Kenyan election officials have submitted about 54,000 documents to the Supreme Court, saying the country will know the whole truth about the August 8th presidential election. Reuters reports the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission was responding to a legal challenge to the results by an opposition coalition. The court will hold a pre-trial hearing Saturday to lay out how the case will proceed. The court has until the end of the month to decide whether the elections were free and fair. The opposition wants the results overturned and for a new election to be held. If the court rejects their appeal, President Kenyatta will be sworn in for another term on September 12th.
This- There's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. AFP reports Buhari canceled today's weekly cabinet meeting. It would have been his first such meeting after returning to Nigeria Saturday. He had spent more than 100 days in London for treatment of an undisclosed medical condition. Yesterday, it was announced that President Buhari would work from home because his office had been infested with rodents during his absence.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has met with an American delegation shortly after Egypt's foreign ministry canceled its meeting with the group. The Associated Press says the foreign ministry move is seen as criticism of a Trump administration decision to cut or delay hundreds of millions of dollars in aid over human rights issues. It described the decision as a misjudgment of the nature of the strategic relations that have bound the two countries for decades. The U.S. delegation is led by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is a close advisor to the president. Kushner has been given the job of trying to revive Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. Egypt receives about $1.5 billion in military and economic aid from the U.S. annually.
At least half a dozen schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions have been burned in the past week. It is the latest sign of deepening tensions as the strike in those regions enters its 10th month. Moki Edwin Kenziga reports from Yaoundé.
Continued arson attacks in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest have prompted calls for the creation of a self-defense militia. Parents argued in Bamenda after their children's school, the Baptist Comprehensive High School, was set ablaze August 13th. Some said it is no longer safe for their children. The burnings have continued. Residents say schools are being targeted for failing to respect the call to strike until all Anglophone activists are released from detention. Messages circulating on social media this month have called for businesses to close 3 out of every 5 working days. Wilfred Ndong is the government official in charge of basic education for the Northwest.
The forces of law cannot be in every school. Therefore, parents, we have advised them to form vigilante groups in the school so that they can help to secure the places for us. And in places where they can afford, let them light up the places. Some of these things happen because of the dark nature of the environment's concern.
Markets and government buildings have also been targeted this year in the Northwest and Southwest. No one has claimed responsibility. The government has condemned the vandalism and blamed it on militant separatist groups. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma told VOA police discovered a cache of weapons and a bomb-making factory in the northwestern town of Bengui earlier this month. He said 7 people were arrested, including a Cameroonian-born Belgian national who had smuggled his way into the country through Nigeria.
He admitted being a member of the Ambazonia and the main leader of the armed wing of the Liberation Movement of Southern Cameroon.
Ambazonia is the name proposed by separatist activists for the nation they would create. At least 60 people arrested in connection with the strike have been answering charges of attempting to destabilize the country and cause revolt before a military court in the capital. A black and white video released online in early August of 12 strike detainees in what appears to be a dark underground prison has further raised tensions. The government has declined to comment on the video, but the footage has been shared widely on social media in Cameroon. In it, the speakers compare their conditions of detention to concentration camps, but say they will gladly die if need be for the cause of independence for the two Anglophone regions. The statement shows the separatist agenda has eclipsed the original strikers' demands calls for reform by Anglophone teachers and lawyers to address what they said was the overbearing use of the French in the nation's education and legal systems. Cameroon is officially a bilingual country with Anglophones about 20% of the country's 23 million inhabitants. Violent strike-related unrest in December, coupled with emerging separatist rhetoric, prompted a government crackdown. Strike leaders then broke off dialogue with the government to resolve the crisis until all those arrested are released. A former lawmaker from the Northwest region, Paulinus Jua, says dialogue is needed.
The government were doing a lot. Things would have subsided. But you see, that this thing is instead, especially in Anglophone Cameroon, getting more radicalized. Something can be done. Dialogue. Genuine dialogue. Comprehensive, genuine dialogue. That's what we've been complaining about in this country for so long.
President Paul Biya has announced some reforms in response to the strike, like a new common law section of the Supreme Court, but has said he will engage in no dialogue that threatens national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Chad has ordered Qatar's embassy in N'Djamena closed, accusing Qatar of trying to destabilize the country. AFP reports the embassy staff has been given 10 days to leave the country. Chad, Mauritania, and Senegal all withdrew their ambassadors from Qatar in June. They accused the Doha government of supporting extremist groups.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In their first election in decades, Angolans cast ballots today to elect a new president. There's more concern today about the health of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. And dozens of schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions burn as tensions in those areas grow. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
At least eight people are reported dead and dozens injured in Guinea after heavy rains caused a giant pile of rubbish to collapse and sweep over three nearby homes. AFP reports the landslide of trash happened on the outskirts of Conakry and Hamdallah after a week of heavy rains. Officials say many people remained buried as rescue workers continue to dig.
In Sierra Leone, aid workers are offering psychological support to survivors of last week's mudslide in Freetown. More than 500 people were killed, including more than 100 children. The death toll is expected to rise since hundreds of people remain missing. Reuters quotes UNICEF official James Gray as saying, "A lot of children who survived have been through a very traumatic experience and are receiving psychosocial support." Heavy rains caused part of Mount Sugarloaf to give way on August 14th in the middle of the night. At least 3,000 people are homeless. Most of the deaths and damage occurred in Freetown Regent neighborhood.
Meanwhile, in the DRC, the death toll from last week's landslide that struck a fishing village is expected to rise above 200. Reuters reports the estimate is based on the number of homes that were buried. Heavy rains triggered the landslide that swept over the village of Tora in Ituri province in northeastern DRC. The acting governor of the province believes mostly adults were killed because it was a fisherman's camp. He says most of the victims' children were in a nearby village when the tragedy occurred. As many as 200 migrants were involved in five mass brawls near the northern French port city of Calais this week. French authorities say the violence occurred between Afghans, Ethiopians, and Eritreans who used sticks and iron bars against each other. 21 migrants and six riot police were injured. The violence is part of escalating tension in France and other European countries as migrants and refugees fear their welcome mat is slowly being pulled from under them. Reporter Catherine Field is following this story as well as other migrant developments and provides us with updates.
It's been 2 days this week where we've had very large clashes between sometimes several hundred migrants. Most of them seem to have been armed with clubs or batons, Afghans against Ethiopians and Eritreans. And it generally seems to always have come about when it's been areas around the distribution of food. This has been a big problem in the Calais region, that since they closed down the so-called Calais jungle in October 2016, there's been no one place, no regular place for these migrants to go for food or even just for showers or to get water. So you've got a lot of tensions there, that as one sort of soup kitchen or food distribution point opens up, people will crowd it because they don't know if it'll be there tomorrow or if it will even be able to stay there to distribute the food. So there's a lot of tension there. Police have arrested five people who they believe are the ringleaders. But certainly it's just another indication of how there is this dreadful feeling among the migrants who are there that literally they're stuck there and the welcome mat really isn't out for them in Europe anymore.
So at this point then, what do you think will be the next step for them?
It's very difficult for them because on the one hand, you've got the European Union who's trying to get all the countries across Europe to take in some migrants. They've done a sort of a round-robin letter to all the countries saying, look, tell us how many you can take and we will compensate you for each migrant you take. But not all European countries are prepared to take in migrants, particularly some of the Eastern European countries are very opposed to this. Here in France, there are tens of thousands of migrants sort of floating around. Some of them are being housed in schools and gymnasiums and university complexes, and their paperwork is chugging through. But the problem's going to come when the first week of September, when everyone goes back to school, universities will reopen after the summer break, primary schools, high schools will reopen, and they've all said they want their properties back. So the French government, within the next week, 10 days, they've got to find new places to house tens of thousands of migrants, or within that period of time, process their application for asylum.
Does this include the 7,000 migrants that were at the camp and that were removed?
Indeed, this has been the big problem. Those 7,000 that were moved in October 2016, they're complaining that their paperwork isn't going through. We're getting the same complaint from the more than 10,000 that have been moved out of the northern Paris suburb of La Chapelle, where they've been gathering over the last year. That's how many have been taken in to some sort of shelter. But they keep saying, look, our paperwork isn't being processed. So they're coming back to Paris and saying, well, we might as well stick with our friends or just sort of colleagues or even people traffickers to find out, is there some way of either getting to Germany or to getting to the United Kingdom?
I understand that you recently visited a soup kitchen. What was it like? What were the migrants saying there?
There's a real edge to them there now because they just don't know how much longer people are still going to be giving out food. They don't know how much longer before police will just round them up and put them somewhere. No one knows where they will go. Some have already gone back to Afghanistan and are coming back to Europe because they say it's just not safe. Things aren't going well for them and they've got to find a place to get their head down before the whole situation, the whole attitude to migrants needing help in Europe, whether it be to get help with a new life here or to help get them resettled back home. And as the French President Emmanuel Macron has said, send them back home, but also send them back home with some sort of job possibility, job training, something back home for them.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking to us from Paris.
In South Africa, a controversial online auction got underway today to sell rhino horns. AFP reports the horns will be sold over the next 3 days, a move that conservationists say will only encourage poaching. The horns come from the world's largest rhino farm north of Johannesburg, where 1,500 of the animals live. Owner John Hume wants to sell 264 horns weighing 500 kilograms of the more than 6 tons of rhino horns he has stockpiled. He says he removes the horns after tranquilizing the animals, saying it is humane and keeps poachers away. And the Humane Society is calling on the South African government not to issue permits to potential horn buyers.
U.S. President Donald Trump blamed the media for much of the controversy surrounding his presidency in a speech to supporters in Phoenix, Arizona last night. Michael Sullivan reports that the president also reaffirmed his political agenda.
After visiting U.S. Marines and Customs and Border Protection agents in the border town of Yuma, Trump was in campaign mode in Phoenix.
This evening, join together with friends, we reaffirm our shared customs, traditions, and values.
Trump has been widely criticized for saying many sides were to blame for the hatred and violence after a white supremacist in Charlottesville, Virginia, rammed his car into a crowd of counter-protesters on August 12th. The man killed a woman and injured 19 other people. Trump accused the media of selective reporting.
Just like they don't want to report that I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK.
His comments after Charlottesville sparked protests in other U.S. cities, and protesters were on the streets in Phoenix Tuesday night.
The man's got nothing done. All he wants to do is clip his political opponents and posture like a proud rooster.
Trump supporters were also on the streets.
I support the right to free speech. I support our president and everything he does. So I support our Constitution. And that's why I'm out here today.
Trump threatened a government shutdown if Congress doesn't fund a border wall and said his tough talk on North Korea is effective. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss why ailing African leaders often travel abroad for their medical care. Should this be an acceptable practice? We'll delve into the issue on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Sports.
Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
This has been a roller coaster of a day for us, trading away Isaiah and Jay and Ante. Especially Isaiah and Jay, who have been such a big part of our team and our success and our Celtic culture as leaders of our team. Very, very difficult day. At the same time, a very exciting time for one of the best offensive players in the league, an NBA champion, an Olympic champion, an all-star, and with some of his best years ahead of him at just 25 years old. Looking forward to the opportunity to working with Kyrie and getting a chance to see him in a Celtic uniform.
That's Danny Ainge, president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics, talking about his club's big trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers. As Ainge said, the Celtics dealt all-star point guard Isaiah Thomas, forward Jay Crowder, and Croatian center Ante Zizic to the Cavaliers to get another all-star point guard, Kyrie Irving. Kyrie requested a trade last month. In addition, the Celtics also gave up a first-round pick in the 2018 NBA draft to acquire Kyrie Irving, the 2012 NBA Rookie of the Year and a four-time All-Star. In a teleconference with basketball writers and reporters, Ainge talked about the timeline involved in making the trade.
It presented itself. It wasn't available earlier in the summer. This same opportunity, and these are very difficult decisions, as you can imagine. We face these difficult decisions at all times during the year. You never know when something might present itself, but an opportunity for us presented itself, even though it is a high price tag. It is a great value that we're giving up. We love Isaiah and love Jay Crowder, and we're just getting to know Ante Zizic, who we've watched and nurtured over the last year and given up a quality first-round pick, but you know, acquiring a 25-year-old perennial all-star, a player that fits a timeline for us and is a fantastic offensive player, is one of the best offensive players in the league. You have to pay a heavy price.
As Danny Ainge says, that heavy price includes giving up a player he loves, Isaiah Thomas.
You know, Isaiah had just an amazing season this year and entertained us all, the whole city of Boston, and everybody fell in love with him. You know, he's such an underdog because of his size and his heart and his spirit in which he plays, and it was very challenging to make this decision.
Danny Ainge and the Celtics lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers 4-1 less than 3 months ago in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. The Cavaliers then went on to the NBA Finals, where they lost 4-1 to the Golden State Warriors. The new-look Celtics and the new-look Cavaliers will renew their rivalry on October 17th in Cleveland, where the Cavs will host the Celtics in the season opener for both clubs. It should be fun watching Kyrie Irving and Isaiah Thomas play against each other, but this time around in new uniforms.
They're playing back.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
You know, without you guys, I wouldn't be where I'm at.
So I really want to say thank you to the fans, because we owe the fans an exciting fight. And I think, you know, I'm happy that it's number 50th, but it's a great matchup, you know, and I'm happy for the fans.
That's Floyd Mayweather, happy for the fans and thanking the fans outside T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's where the unbeaten 40-year-old Mayweather will take on Irish mixed martial arts specialist Conor McGregor on Saturday night in perhaps the year's biggest fight. Critics have called Mayweather versus McGregor more spectacle than an actual boxing match. Mayweather, one of the greatest boxers of all time, has also been called perhaps the best defensive fighter of all time. Some are wondering whether Conor McGregor can even land a clean punch in his pro boxing debut. McGregor doesn't seem fazed, though. He told the fans outside T-Mobile Arena that he'll take out Mayweather quickly.
I believe he'll be unconscious inside one round. I've been fighting my whole life, so it's just another day for me. Another day, another fight. I've already whooped one of the faces of boxing. I'm going to whoop another August 26th.
Conor McGregor has adjusted his training to prepare for his first official pro boxing bout. McGregor is used to 5 5-minute rounds in mixed martial arts fights, or 25 minutes total. On Saturday night in Las Vegas, McGregor must be prepared to box 12 3-minute rounds, 36 total minutes. Only two of McGregor's 24 MMA fights have lasted beyond the second round, and only one has gone the full five. So McGregor has focused a lot of his training on conditioning, sparring up to 12 full rounds at a time. In McGregor's words, "I feel absolutely amazing. We are prepared for every possible outcome." For his part, Floyd Mayweather last fought almost 2 years ago, a 12-round unanimous decision victory against Andre Berto. Mayweather versus McGregor, Saturday night in Las Vegas. Encourage our VOA listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOASunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. KMJ, the morning chef, whose Twitter handle is @KMJonAir. That's @KMJonAir. Sent me a nice tweet from Ghana. The morning chef tweeted, "The Sunny Side of Sports is one of the finest sports presentations I've ever heard. Keep it up, Sunny. So much love from Ghana, the morning chef, serving up a delightful tweet at my Twitter page, the morning chef." Yes, thank you for that delicacy. Our Voice of America listeners might also like to know that over my sporty cubicle here in Washington are a couple of photos taken when I made my first trip to Ghana in 2001. One shows me and my late great colleague Hot Rod Thomas sitting at our dining table in the capital, Accra, getting ready to partake of some smoked bat. Yes, indeed. Eat It Up, Smoked Bat. And the other shows some Ghanaian youth soccer players holding a Sunny Side of Sports banner in Kumasi.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell. For Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. 22 years ago, the South African Fabian Lans swapped ballet to do something very different, motorsport. The 30-year-old Lans has since broken barriers and achieved success competing in male-dominated kart racing. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this feature profile of Fabian Lans by reporter Darren Taylor in Pretoria.
Pounding music accompanies a practice session at Swartkops Raceway. Smells of oil and fuel fill the air. Drivers with their names emblazoned on their jumpsuits prepare to race. One of them is a slim young woman with long brown hair. Fabian Lans's racing career started at this racetrack more than two decades ago when she was offered a chance to drive a kart.
I think you could have walked faster than what I drove. I went that slow. But somehow the bug bit and I was like, no, I actually really like this. I was like 8 years old.
Several years of intense competitions against boys followed.
I got bullied a lot, not physically or anything like that, but on the track, you know, they push you out, they bump you off. You're sort of isolated by yourself because it's in that time there were much less girls racing.
Lan says her father, a former saloon car racer, forced her to toughen up.
Eventually he said, that's it. If you don't drive left of them, right of them, over them, under them, or whatever you need to do to get past, we're going to stop racing. So I had to make a plan.
That plan, she says, was to drive much more aggressively. Footage from the camera on board Fabian Lans's 125cc kart shows her racing on a track in Florida, the United States, at speeds sometimes reaching 100 miles per hour. She's known as Iron Lady on the international karting circuit.
I've been labeled the fast girl from the South. I do my annual return at world finals and things like that. When they see me, they're like, yeah, she's here. She's the crazy one, that's cool.
Despite Lance's take-no-prisoners driving style, she says she's had only one major crash.
I got bumped from behind, and I rolled over the guy in front of me, and I landed on my hand and damaged my finger.
Lance is used to racing around the globe, and she has a few special places to drive in.
I think my most favorite one would be Belgium. I really like the country, the track, the food, everything was really nice. The people were awesome. Italy is another one because the competition's really stiff there, and I normally always want to go and race where the most competition is, because to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Eager to give back to the sport, Lanz has opened an academy at Swarkops. Here she trains youngsters to race karts. Some are so poor that they don't even own bicycles. A few of her pupils roll around the track. At such speed, it's hard to imagine that they're between the ages of 5 and 7. 5-year-old Casey Ensor Smith says karting is amazing.
You're actually riding and you go quite fast. Sometimes you can get scared.
Lance's protégés are mostly all winners, but drivers like 6-year-old Alex Carl just want to talk about the drama they've experienced on the track.
When I was 3, my steering wheel broke and I fell out of my car and other racers were just going right past me. I just rolled into the tires, then my car broke.
His friend Josh LaRue isn't to be outdone.
My friend MK, he spun and then I went over him. I fell out of my whole body, out of my go-kart. Then I bit my tongue and was bleeding from there to there.
Lance warms the kart engine up before another practice. She says everywhere she goes, people ask how she feels about being a pioneer in motorsport. Her answer is usually the same, and given with a cheeky smile. I'm nothing special, just one of the boys. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Pretoria.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
Thanks, Ray, and keep counting them down, buddy. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Wednesday?
Well, the big talk you mentioned earlier in the show, the big trade sending Isaiah Thomas from the Boston Celtics to the Cleveland Cavaliers, sending Kyrie Irving from the Cavs up to Boston. Lots of player reaction on social media. Dwight Howard called it the hashtag game changer deal. So this is giving it the due that many people say it deserves. Dwayne Wade, I like what he tweeted out. It was just an emoji of a set of bulging eyes. Like, can you believe what we're seeing here? Look at this. But the question on many people's minds on social media, what does LeBron James think of this? Because, of course, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving have had a little bit of a back and forth between those two. Well, LeBron retweeted a video where a Cleveland fan has Kyrie Irving's jersey on the ground. It looks like he's about to drop a match on the jersey to set it on fire. As we've seen before, when players get traded, fans get upset. They light the jerseys on fire. But instead of dropping a match, Sonny, he drops a piece of paper that says, "Thank you so much." So a little bit of deception in this video.
Interesting.
It seems to be the sentiment from Cleveland fans. They're very happy. Of course, Kyrie helped to get them that championship with LeBron. So this video said, "Thank you very much." LeBron retweeted this video, and he said, "That's the only way to be to the kid. Special talent / guy. Nothing but respect, and what a ride it was, our 3 years together." So despite that animosity that we've talked about, LeBron is wishing him nothing but the best as he moves on to Boston. Maybe he's happy to see him go. That might be why. But a lot of people pointing out LeBron could not have won that championship alone. Kyrie certainly played a big role. So I think LeBron owes a debt of gratitude to Kyrie Irving there. And as we talk about this trade, all the winners, of which there are many, both sides seem to get a pretty good deal out of this trade. There is one big loser. NBA 2K18, the video game, they just released their cover earlier this month featuring Kyrie Irving in his Cleveland Cavaliers uniform on the cover of that video game. So that makes them the big loser in this trade. It's only about a month until that video game is officially released. So fans are saying, is it too late to change it? You might want to swap that out for a Celtics uniform. Note, Sonny, this is not the first time this has happened, though. Football great Brett Favre appeared on the cover of EA's Madden football game in 2009 wearing a Green Bay Packer jersey right before he was traded to the New York Jets. So this has happened before. In that case, they actually sent out a downloadable link. You could print out a new cover. I don't know if they're going to do that for this NBA 2K18. We'll have to see.
And Andrew, our VOA basketball fan, should mark their calendars for October 17th when the Cleveland Cavaliers host none other than the Boston Celtics in the season opening game for both clubs. That should be a lot of attention surrounding that game.
Oh, there'll be some trending hashtags around that for sure.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, we talked about this big NBA trade. There was a big trade that didn't happen with Barcelona. Barcelona announced on their Twitter and Facebook that they had acquired Angel Di Maria from Paris Saint-Germain. The only problem with this, Sonny, was that the messages weren't from the club, but they were from hackers. Mm-hmm. Barcelona had their accounts hacked, so they quickly had to issue a statement saying that their accounts had been compromised, and in fact, no, there was no trade for Angel Di Maria. But fans looking at that, getting a lot of attention from fans, and a lot of people saying just goes to show that you can't always believe what you see on social media. However, these next two stories you can believe, even though they are a little out there. And we start with ESPN, the broadcaster here in the U.S., and a journalist that works for ESPN named Robert Lee. He covers football games from the University of Virginia. And, of course, we've talked about the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia, where there's been a lot of racial unrest here in the U.S. Well, ESPN announced that they are pulling Robert Lee from the games because he has the same name as Robert E. Lee, who was the general who led the Confederate Army during the American Civil War and fought to preserve slavery. They said that they didn't want Robert Lee, the journalist, to become a meme around Robert E. Lee, the Civil War general. Fans generally think this is ridiculous.
Maybe an overreaction on ESPN's part?
That's one of the big words we're seeing, overreaction. Some words that we can't publish on or speak on air and publish on social media. ESPN's one person said, hates racism so much that they're punishing an Asian man for having an Asian last name. So their effort to try to not be racist actually ended up making it kind of racist. So ESPN did issue a statement saying that seemed like the right decision at the time, but wasn't a great one. But speaking of great decisions, Sonny, we talk about the intersection of sports and social media, but it went to a whole new level recently when Bladick Town Football Club, not necessarily a football club that everybody would know the name of, they're playing in England's FA Cup. They had to sub in someone in the last 10 minutes of their game, and they looked on the bench, and who did they sub in? Their social media manager to play against North Greenford United. This guy was actually in tweeting the game, live tweeting out updates, and they had to put out a tweet that said, well, we're not going to be updating this for the next 10 minutes because we have to send in our social media manager. He laced up his boots and he went in.
Did he have a hashtag on his shirt?
No, he didn't have a hashtag on his shirt, but he did apparently, according to one article I read, he ran into the game. He still had his phone in his hand. They had to be reminded to leave the phone at the bench. But people saying, this is the dream, of course. When you get called up from the bench, you're just there tweeting or you're the equipment manager or something and say, you, get in the game. And this is what happened for this gentleman. Got to play in the game, but a pretty cool stuff, getting them a lot of attention on social media.
Andrew, we have the U.S. Open beginning on August 28th, and I understand you have a programming note for our VOA listeners.
Yeah, a friend of the show, Giddy Nathan of Deadspin, he and I talked about the men's and women's field coming up for the U.S. Open, a little bit of a preview, some of the names to watch, some of the big names that are out of the tournament, and maybe some potential wild cards that could make a deep run into the tournament, maybe win the whole thing. And I know you're going to air that over the next couple days, so look forward to hearing that on the show tomorrow and Friday.
We look forward to hearing that. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the August 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Cornelius Tenner. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FuseNet, a U.S. government-funded provider of information and analysis on food insecurity, is signaling that the hunger and nutrition situation in southeastern Ethiopia is deteriorating, with numerous households in the drought-ridden Somali regional state already experiencing severe food insecurity. Likewise in Kenya. Although the situation is not as dire, insufficient March to May rainfall has left people living in the country's arid and semi-arid regions at risk of crisis-level food insecurity in the near future. In 2011, the Horn of Africa suffered one of the worst droughts on record. The next few years saw subpar rainfall, which means that the hardest-hit regions did not have the chance to recover, either for growing grain or replenishing pasturage. Then came the 2015-2016 season and the abnormally warm El Niño phase of the global weather pattern. As a result, the most fragile regions in the arid Horn of Africa once again saw the deterioration of agricultural and livestock production, rising food prices, and a future wrought with hunger, malnutrition, and resulting diseases. Today, 7.8 million Ethiopians are suffering acute food insecurity, as are 2.6 million Kenyans. That is why the United States announced in early August that it will deliver more than $169 million worth of humanitarian aid for Ethiopia and Kenya. In doing so, the United States is scaling up emergency food assistance. The funds will provide such necessities as specialized nutrition supplies to treat malnourished children, safe drinking water, and essential health services. In Ethiopia, this assistance will provide food aid for about 3 million people. In addition to aid for Kenyans affected by the drought, the United States is also providing support for refugees in Kenya who have fled drought and conflict in their own countries. It is not a famine, but it is rising up to the levels of getting close to famine, said Matt Nims, acting director of Food for Peace at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. That is why we want to act now, so that we're not into that stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss why ailing African leaders often travel abroad for their medical care. Should this be an acceptable practice? We'll delve into the issue on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Ha ha!
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Ira Melman reporting. The United Nations takes on racism in the United States. A UN committee has issued an appeal to the United States to repudiate racially motivated crimes and hate speech following the recent deadly white supremacist rally in the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, and warned that a failure to do so could spark more violence. A statement Wednesday by the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination cited the failure at the highest political level to unequivocally reject racist violent events in the U.S. On it, the panel of rights experts highlight their concern at the horrific events and overly racist slogans, chants, and salutes of white supremacist groups who were at a rally on the 11-12 of August. Anastasia Crickley is chairperson of the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
If those things are not condemned unequivocally at the highest level, then there is a possibility that others can get the idea that they are appropriate and that they are conduct which is, if not condoned, at least will not be rejected.
The statement did not mention U.S. President Donald Trump, who was widely criticized for blaming both sides for violence.